This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Media Splode, Episode 30, House of the Dragon, The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Fanboy Media Splode. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
What's up, people?
And Ron Richards.
I'm back, baby.
And we are here to talk about media on our monthly Media Splode show that was unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Normally, we're talking about comic books or cell phones, but this month, we're talking about media that we've been enjoying watching, things to discuss. There'll be spoilers for some things. Utilize the show notes, especially if you're worried about spoilers for those two shows we mentioned at the top. We'll be delving deeply into those in a minute. We always like to start the show off with what we've been enjoying, what we've been watching. And I'll start, since we're talking about what we've been enjoying, I'm not going to talk about the Quantum Leap reboot, which is an abomination. I'm not going to talk about how Law and Order seems to be coming from Earth 2. It's not quite right. It's close enough, but it's not quite right.
That's very funny.
So I'm going to talk about a show I really enjoyed watching over the last month, and that was Welcome to Wrexham.
Oh yeah, I was gonna mention that. Don't spoil it for me.
That
I'm halfway
was the
through.
Show I was gonna do, but I forgot about it when I said I didn't have a show.
Well, we can all do it together.
Tell everybody what it is, and then I'll tell you the funny thing that my wife said.
So Welcome to Wrexham is basically a documentary series that chronicling the purchase of the Wrexham Football Club by Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, and that's the sort of pitch, but really it's about the town and the people in the town and the team. And it's, you know, Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney are in a lot in the beginning as you sort of learn about the purchase and the club and everything, and then they show up a little more towards the end. But the middle is basically just a little documentary every week about this town of Wrexham in Wales. You know, it's like a lot of small towns in the UK, a lot of small towns in the United States, just sort of down on its luck a little bit. And they've got one of the oldest clubs in English football, and they have one of the oldest stadiums still being used in...
I think it's the oldest.
The oldest. And, you know, there's a lot of pride that goes in the town and the club. And it's, I just found it utterly fascinating, you know, that there would be an episode about the shopkeepers. There was an episode about the people who worked at the club. Yeah. There was an episode about the players. The episode about the players' wives. I mean, it was all very interesting.
And really engaging. Yes. And like, the idea of the community around fandom and all that sort of stuff.
And there was toxic stuff about it. There was an episode about the toxic side of it. It was all very good.
Yeah. So the two observations from my wife and I have been watching it have been that the guy who worked for McElhenney in like the writers' rooms, like Humphrey, went there to be the executive director, and his varying states of facial hair and hair length.
Yes. Couldn't tell who he was.
Yeah.
You know, he's also married to Megan Gans, who is she's the executive producer on Sunny and on Mythic Quest. She's a co-creator of Mythic Quest.
Yeah.
And he's a writer on one or both of them, but he's an actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one part later on you guys haven't seen probably, but where he's shooting an audition tape for Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I saw it. I finished it.
I haven't finished it. I'm halfway through. I haven't seen it yet. So that's the other part of it is that when they get into the soccer team actually playing and like whether or not they're going to do well or not. And like Carrie turns to me and she's like, we can just look up to see how they did in this past season. I was like, right. But I don't want to spoil it. So
you could also just look up any movie's plot line and read it. I mean,
but it was just funny. Cause it was like, it was about a real thing right. That like you could just look in the news.
I had to try not to. Sort of it was the same thing when we were watching a Lakers show. I was like, I kind of remember what happens, but when I didn't want to know.
Right, yeah.
I spent a disproportionate amount of time looking at Ryan Reynolds and being like, I can tell that he's a movie star. Like, he doesn't look like other people, but trying to work out why. And like, Rob McElhenney, he's not a bad-looking dude.
No.
But next to Ryan Reynolds, he looks like a troll.
Right. Well, I don't say troll, but... thing.
You know what I mean?
The episode, we just watched an episode tonight and they were talking, it was some of the older generation of fans. And they're like, when we heard Ryan Reynolds and somebody else bought the team, like there's a lot of like people not knowing who Rob McElhenney is.
Was that, like, at least when they were talking about him, they knew Rob McElhenney's name because they just called Ryan Reynolds Deadpool.
Yeah, exactly.
The other funny thing is that clearly Rob McElhenney was the one super into this. Whereas Ryan Reynolds had, they talk about it a bit more towards the end, had to be sort of dragged into that. I looked it up. Do you guys know how much they paid for the team?
No, how much?
How much do you think they paid for the team?
I couldn't even guess.
$5 million.
$2.5 million.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's jeez. Not a ton,
not a lot.
But it's a lot. I mean,
it's not that the purchase isn't a lot. It's the ongoing maintenance,
right?
And then there's
maintenance. Yeah,
there's an episode where they talk about that. If they don't make to the next level, they're gonna have to pay like $1 million a year to maintain the team. But if they do, that'll get covered by the cost.
There was all these sponsors that wouldn't have been otherwise.
Oh, TikTok
and the
TikTok,
and Reynolds' own company. Yeah. I mean, Reynolds, like, I don't understand how he runs his life. Like, I don't understand how he can do that many things. It doesn't make sense. Like, it's hard enough being a movie star, that alone, and doing like producing and you know whatever. But he's got like all these other businesses. He's doing ads. Like, he's involved to some extent.
Yeah, he has a telecom company. I think he sold Aviation Gin.
Yeah, he did.
But yeah, right. I mean, he's got a lot going on. But yeah, it's I just found it really interesting and fun and funny.
Good. It was really good.
Yeah, really well done. And he announced that season 2 is coming, which was strange because I watched it on broadcast and they were like burning through the episodes, which usually a sign is they're killing the show.
Yeah, at the end they put 4 up, I think, the last.
Yeah, it was like 1 a week and then it was 2 a week and then it was 3 a week and then one was on like Saturday at like noon and then the last 4 all the same night. And I was like, oh no, this show's doomed. But then he put on Instagram that they were putting another season out, so... Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm guessing it picked up in streaming, like they got people watching it that way.
Yeah, so I thought it was terrific. If you don't have to like football or even know about football. Like, it really does.
They actually do a really good job of explaining how the English system worked. I never understood it before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also thought the goalie was really bad, but it turns out he was really good. But they just showed it being bad for a while.
Yeah, they kind of made
how
that up.
People all
bit.
Know the song. Yeah.
Well, drama, you know,
It seemed like he had one bad game. They played up that one bad game a lot. And then,
anyway,
it's a half-hour show, so it's like 20-something minutes and super fun, I thought.
Yeah, I've been enjoying it. Like I said, I think we just finished episode 6 and enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Well, keep the theme of sports. Josh, why don't we hand it to you?
Oh, man, NBA started up. What is it? We're at the end of the second week now. Season openers were last week. And like for some reason, like during the playoffs, my wife became like, an actual basketball fan. Like, she is way into the Celtics. We watched every game in the playoffs. We watched almost, I think we've watched 3 of the 4 or 5 games that have been out this season. I'm watching it right now. I'm not particularly a Celtics fan, but that's the one that I get to watch the most.
It's the regional team. It's the games you get. Yeah.
It is, but I've never liked being the person who likes...
Who would you say you're a fan of?
I'm not. I was talking to our friend Hang about this, because I don't really care who wins. I like seeing really good people do really well at their jobs. And so when I watch a game, I think during a game you sort of get a sense of like, oh, I'd like to see this team win right now because somebody's doing really well and they deserve it or whatever. But I just love watching players. You know, I've got players who I like more, and so therefore I kind of like that team on that night. But like when I was watching the playoffs last year and even the finals, like I was like, I kind of don't care who wins. They're both interesting stories. Which goes back to the same thing of like, you know, the old, like, I have no investment in a specific team, though. Like, none. Never have. It just doesn't work that way.
That's not that much different than watching, like, for instance, like the World Series right now. And neither team that's in it I'm rooting for. So I would, well, the World Series is a bad example because I hate Houston. But, like, I watched all the playoffs, all of the rounds, every game. And I don't, you know, if my team's not in, I find, okay, which, give me a good game. Give me a fun situation. That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah. And I read like the news, like when I turn on my news app, I'm like, all right, I'll go to the NBA news. And I think that this is all a reaction to the fact that I'm kind of bored of like most of the entertainment. We were talking about that in our hangout, you know. And then the other thing is the news is so terrible that I can watch this. And you guys, you've been watching baseball, so maybe you've experienced this, but I haven't in a long time. It's like I can just watch a basketball game and there's nothing overtly political about it or like you can just watch the thing. I mean, obviously it's political. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on there in a way, but it's been, you know, and it's fast. Like you're keeping all what's going on. Like, why are the Lakers so bad right now? Like they're terrible.
Right. Yep.
Are the Nets going to be any good? You know, good. I mean, I started watching, I want to say in the middle of last season, sort of like really paying attention. I watched all the playoffs and this season I was ready for it. And I'm kind of didn't expect to, like, I've been watching games most nights. I don't know who I am anymore. But it's been really
good.
No, it's awesome. It's been really fun just to have a thing that is feels fresh and interesting. But I watch basketball all the time in high school. And so it's not like I don't know the game. And I've gotten used to the new game with the threes and the flopping and everything. So, that's probably it. That's what I've been watching.
I've been enjoying the docuseries on Disney Plus called Light and Magic, which is all about the story of Industrial Light and Magic.
Oh, I believe our friend Mike Romo is watching it. He keeps telling me about it, that I should watch it.
Yeah. What I find interesting about it is this might be the last one because everybody's getting old. And they've got George on it, and they've got John Dykstra on it, and they've got Dennis Muren. They've got everybody who was there, and they're all talking candidly.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. So if you're familiar with the making of Star Wars and the history of Industrial Light and Magic, you know that they built this special effects house to do Star Wars, and George Lucas went to London to go shoot the actors, and John Dykstra was supposed to hire everybody in Van Nuys to do the effects, and when George came back from London, they had one shot done. And like, so you've got George like saying, yeah, and so you've got Lucas today saying, I think he's just in over his head. Like they were just like talking frankly about what happened and like and the evolution of it and then the success and then the move up to the Bay Area and how not everyone got invited, including John Dykstra, didn't get invited up to Marin to make Industrial Light and Magic and all this sort of stuff. So it's like, you know, like I've seen every making of Star Wars documentary over the years. Like there's the one that we grew up with, right?
Yep.
The one that came out with Jedi that I know by heart and that sort of thing. But like this has been somewhat interesting and illuminating in that it's like a little more like everyone's a little older and either doesn't remember it as well exactly or doesn't care as being not that there's a lot of, you know, salty, you know, in it, but like they're being honest, which I respect.
Not worried about burning bridges and getting jobs anymore, you know?
So yeah, exactly.
The thing.
Are they airing grievances?
Yeah, that's interesting.
No, I wouldn't say they're airing grievances, but they're being, there definitely is a feeling of honesty in it, which I think is interesting.
Sure.
So Light and Magic, it's definitely, if you're a Star Wars fan or a movie fan, because it goes beyond Star Wars. Like the series goes through, it's all about Industrial Light and Magic, not just about Star Wars, but Star Wars is such a big part of like the first three episodes.
It's in the DNA. I mean, you can't get away from it.
Yeah, for sure.
Very cool.
All right. So those are the things we've been enjoying. We want to get quickly into our main topics because there's a lot to talk about. So we're going to talk about the two big fantasy series that just were airing at the same time. They just sort of wrapped up together sort of a couple of weeks apart. Now we've all watched them. Let's dive in to The Lord of the Rings of Power, and The House of the Dragon discussion. Let's start off with The Lord of the Rings of Power, which was on Prime.
It's going to be meaty.
And it was eight episodes on Prime. This is the big deal that was struck by Lord of the Rings superfan Jeff Bezos. I think $500 million was said to be the budget. It's the story that takes place well in the past, does not touch or deal with stuff that happens in the films. It is pre the Third Age. The Third Age?
That's not entirely true.
No, not entirely true, but because there's characters who are basically immortal. But still, it's the story that leads up to this little pre-story, the first part of the movie.
So this is a prequel, what you're saying.
It's a prequel.
Right, but the point being, like, if you've read the book, more so, but or watch the movies, like this is a lot of the stuff that they spoke about, like as legend in the past, and sort of like where they come from, which is not apparent at first.
Yeah,
like, I think it, like for a while you're just like, who are these people? Why am I?
watching
this? Yeah.
Were you guys excited for this when it was announced? We all love the movies.
Yeah,
sure.
So you were excited for it?
No, not pretty. I mean, I'm bad with that question. I don't get terribly excited.
Josh doesn't get excited.
He doesn't get excited about anything. I think I was curious about it. Yeah, I was intrigued about it.
I think I was probably skeptical.
Yeah, that too, right? Because like, let's be honest, at its heart, this is fanfic.
Well, I mean, everything. By what definition?
Definition that it is not adapting anything Tolkien wrote.
He wrote everything in detail somewhere, didn't he? I don't know. I don't know the details on it. But so that's interesting is that I think I had that opinion of it going into it. I think that I thought, once I heard there's no Peter Jackson, there's not anything to do, I thought, are they going to do like a different thing? But watching it, it still felt of a piece. You know, there was an action scene at one point where I was like, oh, they're doing Peter Jackson here. Like, everybody talked like they did in Lord of the Rings. I don't know where they shot.
Yeah, the orcs.
It may as well have been New Zealand. I don't really know. But
no, it's not.
It wasn't like a bold new take, which is good in this instance.
Well, you can't really. It's the iconography of the fantasy world is based on this world.
I know, but there's lots of different ways to shoot this thing. And they shot it.
Yeah, but you're not going to spend $500 million on an experiment. You're going to stay in the safe zone of keeping it looking and feeling like.
Some familiarity, right? Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to get fired, you do that. I don't think I was excited. I was more curious. You know, we're in the age now where everything is going to get made again or get prequelized or sequelized. And so it doesn't matter what it is or if there's any source material, like Ron said, it's going to get done. So when the inevitable announcement for Lord of the Rings is like, okay, well, here we go. And like, I think like Josh said, I wasn't sure it was going to be a remake or what, but you know,
I was not excited. Yes, everything's going to get remade and sequelized or whatever, but it tends to be that the exception is that they're good, not the rule. So with like the Watchmen TV series, that was unexpected. And then this being good, I just assumed, I was like, probably not good. Might be, that'll be interesting.
All right.
Which we can also.
And I don't know that in the first couple episodes didn't lead in that direction. You know, like the first couple were kind of dull, and there was a lot of characters, and you didn't really know who anybody was. And
I found myself super distracted in the first third of the show, and the reason being is that I fell into the trap of falling prey to trying to figure out, am I supposed to know who these people are? Right? Because it opens up with Galadriel, who like, okay, yes, that is Cate Blanchett. Okay, now I'm trying to resolve a younger version of her, and would she be like this and stuff like that? And then they introduce Scott Snyder. I mean, Elrond, right? I'm like, okay, so Elrond is, you know, Mr. Smith. Okay, this was the then they introduce a bunch of people who are like, I frantically looked up, like, am I supposed to know who this person was? And I'm not, right? Hal Brand, I don't know who that is. And blah, blah. Introduce this guy Isildur, and I'm like, okay, Isildur? Wait, is this the Isildur, or is like Isildur just like Steve, and this is just a Isildur, right? And I found myself doing that and it took like four episodes for me to just like stop to turn my brain off and just watch the story for what it was, because I was trying to figure out the connections to what I knew. It was very distracting.
That's prequelitis. That happens to me with everything like that. I'm like, wait, is that the guy? Is that who's that? Because my wife knows the books better than I do. I'm like, is that who is? And after a while, she's just like, shut up.
I used to know the books. If I had seen this 10 years ago, it would have been easier, but I've forgotten a lot of it.
Yeah.
And also, I'm doing the same thing in the next year we're going to talk about too. I'm like, is that who? Wait, what?
Oh, it's the same thing.
It's just a matter of when things are connected to the thing you know really well. You're like, wait, am I supposed to know who that is? And after a while,
you have to stop. There's just there's so much stuff now that there's always this feeling like, did I miss something I was supposed to know? It's all just a different version of like, there's so many things to pay attention to. And when a plot comes on as a bunch of new characters, and especially if it's in a fantasy setting where everybody's got weird ass names, or in the case of the next show where everybody has weird ass names that sound exactly like the other weird ass names, but with a different letter on them. you know, it's hard.
So this was 8 episodes, and I liked the second half, the second four better than the first four. I liked the last two the best.
Yeah.
But overall, I don't know that this was a good show. I liked watching it. I didn't love watching it. I think I actually fell behind a couple of weeks and had to catch up.
Yeah.
I was talking to our buddy Hank about this, who we talked about earlier. His friend described it as if someone gave the CW $500 million to make a show. Like,
yeah, I can see that.
I didn't find most of the actors compelling or interesting. I thought they were mostly bland.
To a certain extent.
There were so many characters, and they were all over the map. First of all, I didn't know how they were in relation to each other. Like, you know, you don't really know the map of the world very well. So I didn't know. In the beginning, it's like you're there's like four different groups of people, and you're following them around, but you kept bouncing around between the groups. You don't know how they interact with each other or why they're important to each other. And I just felt myself really kind of detached from most of it. By the end of it, I was much more into it, but it took a long time to get there. And I'm not sure it was super successful as an opening season. I think if you're not really, really into it, you might not have made it through the whole 8.
It was very sleepy to start.
Well, I mean, it
was a slog.
The first episode was a slog, but it's because it was all elf shit, which was the worst part of the movie.
Right. That was the other thing. Like, I remember because we put on the first episode. My wife watched it with me, and she was like, halfway through the first episode, she's like, I'm out. And we paused it, and I'm like, here's the issue. When the movies came out, we used to joke that the elf parts was when you went to the bathroom in the theater. Because you wouldn't miss anything because it was so slow and quiet and all this sort of stuff. And this seems to be all elf part.
Yeah.
which seems like a bad approach.
Yeah, the pacing was very odd in that way. But, I mean, I think the show depended on the fact that you were going to watch it all the way through. Right. Like, if you said, I'm going to watch this until I'm until I get bored and then I'm going to get out, then it's not rewarding at all. But I found that, I think slightly different than Connor, is that I found it to be a slog through most of it, and I wasn't going to watch it. Like, you said you were doing this, and I didn't think I was going to make it. But it did pick up, and then I think that by the end, the rewards were worth it, and you had spent enough time sort of getting to know these other versions of the world that we knew, and sort of it comes together. But you really had to wait for it. You know, that last two episodes, I think, really did pay off.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the second to last one, right, where they came together finally, the characters. It was like...
Yeah, and even the last episode with the reveals and the payoffs and stuff like that, but then I found myself walking away from the last episode feeling like finishing the last issue of Wolverine Origin.
Right.
Where it was like, one of the reasons why Sauron was so terrifying in the Lord of the Rings trilogy is because you never see him.
Yeah, but that story's in there.
So you didn't know he was sexy, Ron. He was a sexy,
He was pretty, and he was charming.
And a smith.
And he was, I mean, but like that's the story. That's in the Tolkien. And,
sure, and I'm so not. I'm,
they're,
yeah,
they're showing it to you. But I also, you know, like I kind of fell for the misdirection thing.
Sure, everybody did.
I think I want to say
everyone did. Yeah,
I want to say in episode 5. Or four, whatever. I was like, "Oh, that dude's probably Sauron," but the old man, and then
the stranger
one. Yeah.
Oh, I knew for episode 3 or 4. I'm like, "Oh, he's a wizard."
Right. Well, is he Sauron, or is he? I thought
he might be Sauron at first, and because the other one you didn't really suspect, and then there was like one line in the 7th episode, I think, where they said, "Oh, we'll control the flesh," and she's like, "Wait, who said that?" And I remembered that like the story of Sauron is that like he was a human prince. He was, you know, he's Voldemort. He's good looking, charming, you know, interesting dude, which is much more interesting, you know, than the old wizard guy. Is this supposed to be Gandalf? Do we know?
They haven't said, but that's the implication.
There's a line at the end of the last episode when he says, "Follow your nose," because that's what Gandalf says to Frodo. Right. So it's indicated that it's Gandalf.
And he has a deep love of the hobbits, and so the Harfoots are the progenitors of that.
The proto hobbits.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm comparing movie stars to TV stars, but like, you know, there's no Viggo Mortensen amongst the cast. There's no, you know, there's no Sean Bean.
Well,
there's no Orlando Bloom even.
I came around on Galadriel. I think that she was really good.
She's the best one.
The guy who plays Elendil looked and felt the part, although he's not like the hero. Like, you know, he was like one of the Riders of Rohan kind of people, you know, Carl Urban, you know, that kind of. I was like, okay, that works. The lead elf in the sort of rebellion part, I don't know, like a lot of the people playing
Arendir
it didn't seem like elves to me. Like, they didn't move in that way and like, the dwarves seemed like dwarves. I was like, those are great dwarves, you know. But some of the elves were just kind of all over the place in terms of their, like, in Lord of the Rings, you'd be like,
I did not like the elves. Although I did like Celebrimbor, the guy who made the rings. I liked him, but I didn't like the elf king. I didn't like the elves.
That was one of the only actors who I knew from something else.
Yeah, it was tracking.
He's in a lot of things, but he was in Toast of London, which was I'm trying to think of his name. Matt Berry's show. Uh-huh. And he was like Matt Berry's weird actor roommate, and I can't see him as anything else. So it's difficult. And so I was like, oh, he's a doddering, funny old fool. But I don't know what he was supposed to be because that's all I saw. Yeah, like the factions just seemed a little different. I like the relationship between Elrond and
the dwarf
Doran,
the prince, dwarf prince.
I like that a lot. I like that the dwarf and his wife really got along well. Like, they loved each other. I thought it was really sweet.
Yeah.
You know, like, there were parts of it there. I like the, you know, we never really understood what Mithril was. Or Mithril. There's a lot of, they were really going for the elven language.
Yeah.
You know, the little girl who was the Harfoot girl, she was great.
Yeah.
You're right. There wasn't any movie stars. But it's interesting. Like, I don't think that any of those people were movie stars when they did Lord of the Rings.
That's my point. But they had quality to them that you couldn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's another criticism I'll have for the next show too. Is that there's no one who you're just like, whoa, who is this actor?
There's at least one in the other. There's two people in the other show.
Well, the other one has more. We'll get to the other. But this one, I felt really like, you know, it was a lot of bland performers.
It felt like the Silmarillion. It felt like Appendices.
Yeah. There's some really talented actors here, but I just feel like the roles they're playing, maybe it's the direction. If one of them walked in this room right now, I don't know that I recognize him. Not just because of the makeup.
It was all pretty underplayed. Like, there were not big heroic moments for people other than maybe
Galadriel. Not for a while. They were at the end.
Yeah, but even so, like, you know, there just weren't super memorable scenes in general, I think. I don't know. It's very subtle, but I kind of don't mind that.
I mean, it's not a bad show. I'm not saying it's a bad show. I just don't know.
Money all over the screen. I mean, like,
yeah, it looked beautiful.
Yeah.
I definitely found myself enjoying it more towards the end than in the beginning.
But isn't that better? Like, isn't if you had to choose a way?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer steady, to be honest. Yeah.
I mean, like, but no, it's like anything. A show has to find its footing.
So if somebody came up to you and said, was Lord of the Rings good? What would you say?
It was all right.
I think it was pretty good, and if you really like Lord of the Rings, I think it's worth the time. And I had to come fully around.
Right.
You know, like, for a while, two episodes in, I was like, I don't want to watch. If it wasn't for the show, I wouldn't have done it.
Right. And I'm glad we had to tell you to keep watching.
Yeah. But it was worth it. I think it was good. It's one of those things like, was it successful? Did it know what it was doing all along? Did it have to take time to find its footing? Yes, but it found it, and that's where the payoff was.
I will say my experience with watching it towards the end when the last two episodes, when they activated the volcano, and I was like, oh, it's Mordor.
Yeah.
Like, I did prequel groan there. And then in the last episode, when they did the misdirect with the stranger, to make you think that it was when the creepy bald person told the guy in the robe that he was Sauron, I like paused it and I groaned, and my wife's like, "What's the matter?" I'm like, "Oh, they just did something really stupid, you know? They made somebody who I didn't want to be Sauron," and then I didn't see the Halbrand thing coming, and then I was like, "Oh, okay." It redeemed himself from my prequel annoyance, you know, like, so which is good. Like,
but
know,
the thing
played.
Is, you also like half of it was complaining about this is fan fiction. I don't know who any of these people are. To I don't want them to refer to the other stuff. Like, you can't have it both ways.
No, I can try.
Well, I know, yeah, no, but you're right. Like, I know. like you just complained about both sides of it, and they both paid off.
I liked the Mordor change. I liked how they used the title on the screen to change. I thought that was good.
Yeah, that was actually really helpful, and it could have been goofy, but they did it well. I gotta say, I think that the moment the show turned is when the orcs show up. Like,
they
show
very early.
Okay. Yeah, but
like two or three.
I think. I know, but I feel like we spent more time with them. There's one of the episodes that start where like they have some of the elves like doing their labor for them, and you realize like, oh, they can't come out in the light, and you know that's, and you meet.
Yeah, you forget that in the film very early on. It's like the big news is I think the orcs can come out in the daytime.
Right.
There's the like half elf guy, because the story is that orcs were elves once, you know, and they were tortured and turned into, and I like that you saw that guy who was sort of like halfway in between. Aaron, I forget his name, but he was great. He was really good to watch. He's a great bad guy.
He was interesting. He was compelling.
And he played it down the middle. Like he wasn't evil. He was like, you kind of like
you gotta play it straight.
Well, no, but he even like had like some nobility about him. He was referring to them as his kids and said something along the lines of like, do they have no more right to exist than you?
Right.
You know, and Galadriel's like, I'll kill every one of them. And you kind of think, well, wait a minute, what makes you right?
Right.
I thought that was really interesting.
So as a transition to the other show, the second season of Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, and House of the Dragon, you're not going to see either one until 2024.
I'm okay with that.
I think that's fair.
That's fine.
I'd rather that than rushing it. I mean, you got to do a good job. Do a good job.
I mean, I feel like with both of these shows, these are shows that are adjacent to things that I like that I didn't ask for.
I didn't ask for any of this.
I didn't ask for any of this.
There's a pull quote. This was adjacent to things that I like that I didn't ask for. Is that a good review or not? I don't know. Put it in the box.
Let's transfer over to House of the Dragon, or Hot D, as it's known in our house, on HBO and HBO Max. And this has been filling the Game of Thrones time slot. It's been a huge hit for HBO. And this is the prequel for the Game of Thrones series. It takes place 172 years before Dany Targaryen's born. And it has to do with her family, the Targaryens.
172 or more?
You told me like a while ago that it was a lot more than that, Connor.
I thought it was a lot more, yeah.
You said that. And I was watching, I was like, but I don't think...
No, it's the Rings of Power, it's thousands of years before. This is 172 years.
You mix it up.
I must have mixed it too. Yeah.
So this is about the machinations of the Targaryens on the throne in King's Landing. And similar to the Rings of Power, I don't know if this is a good show, but I was excited to watch it every week. And I think it's mostly because I just love being in that world and in the warm embrace of Westeros. But I don't know that the show was good.
Similar to my last thing about Rings of Power is that I wasn't super excited about it because I got less excited about the show as it went on. Like, I really liked it at first, and then my interest kind of waned. And so when this came back, I thought, well, I mean, it could be good, but it could not be. No, you know, where or another. And again, it was kind of slow at the beginning, but after just a little while, once I kind of started to sort out who everybody was, and there were problems with that. This was much more confusing.
Well, yeah, part of the problem is there's three Targaryen names, and they all have them. And you're like, which Aegon are you talking about? And they all have the same hair.
Yep.
I found myself really invested. Like, we were watching it as they came out, and you know, I think, well, I want to say three or four episodes, I think Lindsay was like, are we going to keep watching this? And then she came around at one point. And I think, I was pretty into it by the end.
I really had the same issue. Like Megan, so after the first episode, she was like, I'm not going to watch this. And I said, okay, I'll watch it. And she's like, I'll be here while you're watching it, you know? And then eventually became interested in what was happening. But I don't know. It's almost like there's this big, beautiful world and they spend the entire time in one room. That's kind of what the show is. And that was sort of a downside for me.
The thing that it made me realize, in addition to it being in one room, it made me also realize that, like, I don't like Targaryens.
They're assholes.
Like, they're all kind of awful. And like, Dany was great, but then I'm reminded of her shithead brother in the first season, right? Like, so I'm like, Targaryens aren't nice. Like, I don't like.
but that's the thing. I mean, they were warlords. Yeah. They had the dragons. Right. Like, they're powerful. Yeah. That's not in keeping with sort of how power.
Sure,
works.
But when you're watching a show, you need someone to root for, and there's not anybody to root for.
Right? Yeah, I struggled with finding somebody to root for a lot for? In the show.
The Starks, Snow, all the Starks.
Jon Snow, Starks. Yeah.
I mean that's true, but they killed Ned Stark like right away.
All of the Starks, the kids. Yes. I mean, they were all basically good.
Yeah.
Not only that, not only no one to root for, but no one enjoying any moment of their lives on this show. It's just
at all.
And again, I enjoyed watching the show, but for the most part, it's just like everyone's dour and sad, and no one makes cracks a joke, and no one seems to know how to smile, and no one has a good time. Even when they had sex, it was like really awful and terrible.
This show is more from the point of view of the female characters, and I think that part of that is that like they had kind of they had our shitty raw deal. And so it makes it less swashbuckly and fun, I think.
Right.
Because their lives were so controlled. I mean, that was one of the sort of major themes. And so, it's sort of less fun in that way. But I did find it, I liked seeing bits of Daenerys in this. Like you'd see in Rhaenyra, you go, oh, okay, I liked those connections. I thought that they made sense. And I did think that there were a couple of performances and a couple of the actors, a few that really kind of stood out to me. I was blown away by Matt Smith, I watched him on Doctor Who and he was fine, but that's actually when I stopped watching the show, and he was great in The Crown, but I thought in this he just played against type so much, and I was like, ugh, he's unpredictable at best, evil at worst. Yep. And then Patty Considine, I was like, wow.
He was great.
Amazing. Yeah. And then the first Rhaenyra, more so than the second, I was just like, he's fascinating.
Millie Alcock.
The time jumps were struggling.
Yes.
And when they switched from young Rhaenyra to old Rhaenyra, I was like, I did not like that. Like, I missed her. Like, I thought she was really interesting. And if they just stayed in that time period or whatever.
And that was also part of the problem with the show, was the structure was bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't clear how much they jumped. And then some people were the same actors and some weren't. And then there were a bunch of kids and they had different names. And I was like, that episode was a lot of, hold on.
Yeah. Who's this? Yeah.
And you meet all the other blonde kids and they all have the same name. And those were.
It was weird because they clearly want to get to the Civil War, right? So this is like all these Game of Thrones books are based on real historical things that happened. Game of Thrones itself was the War of the Roses, and this one, I think I forgot the name of it, but it was the Civil War that happened in England when the family broke apart two sides went to battle. They wanted to get there, but they also wanted to lay the groundwork. But the problem was the groundwork took place over the course of like 20 years, so you were dealt with everything both moving too fast and too slow at the same time. And you never got a footing. You couldn't by the time you got to like somebody, they were gone. Also, if you thought too hard about it, you're like, well, what's happened in the last 10 years? Because nothing has seemed to change since last week. Everyone is still in the same place with the same grievances and the same grudges. Nothing has happened in a decade.
Right.
There's a lot more to their daily life than just having kids. They're trying to constantly cut each other's throats. So nothing ever happened for 10 years. It was just a very bizarre way to do it. Again, I liked it, and I liked it. By the end of it, I'm excited to get to where it's going, but it's just so strange. Where Lord of the Rings is too big in the beginning, this is way too small in the beginning.
I think where it gets you is that there are a lot of interesting characters, and I know that you said there wasn't anybody to really root for, but, and I don't know anyone's name, so this is going to be harder. The cousin, the lady with the white hair, who was the lady of the Driftmark,
mm-hmm.
She was fascinating because you know what she'd been through, and you kind of couldn't tell where she was coming from. And then she got her badass moment. And even after that, she's standing there, and you're like, I'm not sure what she's doing. And she was playing it real close to the vest, which I liked. I liked that her husband, he had a lot. I thought the characters were actually relatively complex in what it was they wanted and how they acted in that way. And I think most of them you kind of can't tell. Like the king, Aerys? Patty Considine.
Viserys.
Viserys. The thing you see at the beginning is that, like, oh, he loves his daughter and he loves his wife. But then he has his wife more or less killed so that he can have a baby, and that baby dies. It's a terrible thing. But after that, he's kind of a good guy,
right?
As far as these things go. And then it's funny, in the time jump, I was like, does he know all of his kids are fucking horrible? But also, like, why are they horrible? Because the mother, Allison... that was our big joke. You can sing the Elvis Costello song. You just had a...
That's funny.
She was not a bad person. Like, she was shoved into it. Viserys was in, like... But the kids are just evil. And I thought roommate from Notting Hill, he was great.
Yeah, he's great.
And for a while, you... you think, oh, he seems like a good guy, and he's, you know, he's got the ambition or whatever, but not like the kids are evil, which is second generation wealth people. That's often the case.
Insanity runs in the Targaryen line. That's why they're all evil. But also Otto was pretty evil too.
Right. So the scene when they go into the city and Matt Smith and the girl, like, almost, I was like, this is the most uncomfortable scene I've ever
watched. That was tough because really she's so rough. Young.
And then later they get together and I'm like, am I supposed to be okay with this? Because I'm not.
Right. I had the same.
And like, they're acting like they're in love. And I was like, I am so not. And I get it. Like, they had set it up. This is the thing that Targaryens do.
Right.
But I'm not from that world and I'm creeped out by it.
Yeah.
This franchise has normalized incest.
Yeah, it really has. It really has.
Like, that was really difficult because she was. I guess if any of the characters are the ones that you're rooting for Rhaenyra's.
Right.
I think.
Yeah, but she's like, she hasn't done anything to make it worthy of it. You know, like, there's
it's true.
It's just, you're doing it by default. Well,
then the other thing about that is, like, those kids are clearly someone else's kids.
Yeah, I know, and they just kept on, continuing the lie.
I know, and no one's allowed to say, but like, it was such an obvious lie. I was like, this is really interesting. And the one guy who's like, listen, it's true, and he gets his face cut off for it.
The uncle, the sea serpent guy, he said, blood doesn't matter, it's the name, you know? Yeah. So like, they all know it, but what are they going to do?
Still.
You know?
Exactly, but it was so far afield. Like, I don't know if you've noticed, but those people are all black with white hair. It's really obvious. They all have it. But that's what happened.
It's interesting because if you compare, and you can't help but compare to Lord of the Game of Thrones, there's too many things we're talking about. Game of Thrones, the original series. I mean, it took me about 3 or 4 episodes to really get into that show, like really sort of get my feet under me and my legs under me. So I acknowledge that. Yeah, I acknowledged it wasn't like out of the gate, but like also out of the gate, you had some stars come out of that show. You had some bona fide stuff, people who like headline stuff now. And I don't know that you're going to have anybody coming out of this show who wasn't already a name, like Patty Constantine or Matt Smith was already a name. So like everyone else.
Negroni Subligato with Prosecco might, you know.
I don't know what you just said.
Did you have a stroke?
You guys aren't plugged in. So they HBO Max did a behind the scenes thing to promote the show, and they had the actress who played Alicent and the actress who played Rhaenyra asking each other questions. Alicent asked Rhaenyra what their drink of choice was, and they said in the British accent, somewhat sultrily, unintended, but said Negroni Subligato with Prosecco.
Like one of the kids too?
And it blew up. Yeah. It blew up on TikTok and on social and all this sort of stuff where everybody, and it was like a big LGBTQ thing because they're non-binary and all that like sort of stuff. But like, and now bars were serving Negroni Subligatos. Like it was just this whole thing that came out of this one weird House of the Dragons promo thing. So like that could elevate that person, you know, possibly because it was a viral moment outside of the show's content. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But even the actors in the small roles, like this, the entire small council in Game of Thrones, everyone in there was incredibly compelling and interesting. And everyone, I didn't even know who anyone was, even by the end of the show. Like, wait, is that guy in the small council? Like, there's no little.
Yeah, you couldn't.
Here.
They didn't focus on it. Yeah,
but those actors were also really.
You also
compelling
had nothing
too.
To compare it to.
Yeah,
like the first time you had nothing to compare it to, and now you do, and so therefore it's going to lack. I'm not. You're not wrong, by the way. You are. I think the other bit is that. Acting in original Game of Thrones was pretty big. And in this, I mean, if you had Paddy Considine setting the tone, like he was kind of doing like subtle Shakespeare, I thought. And so I was like, this is amazing acting, but not in the way. Again, we said the same thing about Lord of the Rings. Like there weren't hero moments. It was like subtle. Right. And one thing I noticed, and I want to make sure I don't forget it, is that like House of Dragons was beautifully shot. Like, it was amazing cinematography. I kept seeing really thoughtful and interesting shots, and I wish I could remember a single one of them. But it was just lit. It was really dark, I know that. But the sort of composition, it just felt really thoughtful and interesting and good-looking. Again, all the money is on the screen, for sure, although except for the fact that it all took place in that one room.
Right.
And the dragons look good. The dragon fights are interesting. And, you know, we're about to have a dragon.
I thought there'd be more. I was looking for more dragons, to be honest with you.
I think the dragons are coming later.
begun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I just from a sort of business standpoint, you could just sort of see it was like, oh, everyone on Twitter complained about the sex and the violence. Well, we're going to tone that way down. And this is the show you get where it's not as compelling, you know?
Right.
It's just, it's sort of like
a different world.
They overreacted to the few people who are online complaining about things, and they sort of neutered the excitement level of the show.
Right.
I think, who's the kid, the eye patch kid, the older version of him?
Yeah.
Amon.
Little Matt Smith.
He's the greatest, like, bad guy looking dude in a long time. But also, didn't seem fully evil. Like, he had some things where I was like, oh, he's got a point there. Like, he wasn't insane, for example.
Right.
But I couldn't stop looking at that dude. I was like, wow, he looks like a cartoon, like a cartoon evil person. He also looked way cooler without the eye patch.
Yeah. I mean, the one is the really evil one, the king now? Is he the one who's the king? The rapist?
He's insane. Yeah, he is that, but he's also, he's weak. He's Commodus from Gladiator kind of thing, I think.
So,
and he didn't want to be king until he got there and he heard them cheering for him. He's like, yes. And
this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm complaining a lot because I think there was a lot to complain about, but I did enjoy it. Like every week I was like, ooh, it's time for House of the Dragon. And so I was happy, you know, I think by the end of it, there's a lot of interesting things.
Like, we went without appointment viewing for a while.
The story really sort of kicks off in episodes 9 and 10. I mean, they're laying a lot of groundwork to get to that point. And then once they get there, you're like, oh, okay, now things are happening. Now there's interesting conflicts. But
I got to say, it's interesting to hear that it's really successful because it's one of those things where it's like, who's watching this?
Everybody
because it's really, I know, I get it, but it's really complicated and it's really pretty subtle. It's not what I would consider to be sort of crowd pleasing. And I mean, I don't know what a hit show is at this point. Like, I don't know how many people have to watch it, but like you've got to work at this. This is not basic level storytelling, I think.
Yeah.
And like just keeping track of everybody. Like, I can just imagine people all across America that were like, no wait, now which one's that again? Because I'm doing it.
Yeah, I think that's 100% happening. And but I think that's happened in Game of Thrones in the beginning too. Until you really got your head.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I read all the books in the middle of, like, between season 1 and 2, and that helped immensely. You know, because then I knew, but for a while, I was pretty lost.
So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. But I mean, Ron, overall, what did you?
I mean, overall, I watched it every week. I mean, I was pulled in. I liked going back. I liked going back to the universe, and I wanted to see dragons.
You got them,
but not as much as I thought. To be honest with you, I found myself, as I'm watching it, going back to, I didn't ask for any of this. Like, I had a hard time really getting emotionally invested in it in the same way that I was in the previous show. Understanding that you had what, like 7 seasons of the previous show that so there's a lot of investment there, and it's hard to do in. But like, I found myself having a hard time grasping onto the thread. You know, and Josh, to your point, yeah, it's like who you're rooting for. Like, I was rooting for Rhaenyra. Like, I was rooting for.
She's all you had.
Yeah, she was all you had to really hold on to. You know.
They did do the thing where for a little bit you're like, well, am I okay with Daemon now? I mean, sure.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Which was the thing that Game of Thrones did. I mean, like, one of my favorite character Jamie. In that show was, Jamie Lannister, who starts out as evil. He discovers, you know, we discover sort of an inherent nobility about him.
Yep.
You know, that's interesting. He was my favorite character in the book.
So I want you both to take me through your emotional process during the foot fetish sequence.
I just groaned. Yeah.
It wasn't as uncomfortable as the earlier, which I'm just going to go ahead and call statutory family rape. Although she was into it and he took off, so who knows? Yeah. It was all super uncomfortable. I mean, I think that was one of those things where I think it was gross and everybody. It was actually really compelling that the woman who is queen, in order to play the game, which is going to make her father happy, has to like subject herself to this thing. And like I was like, oh, she only has the visage of power. Like, she still has to do this stuff. And like, that's, this world's really ugly for her because she's a woman. And she's actually a really interesting character too, because I don't think she was coming from a bad place, but she was forced to play the game, and
she was molded into what she became by her father. And
yeah,
but
oh,
even
totally.
Then, she was, yeah. you know, and like the whole thing is predicated on a mishearing and a misunderstanding. You know, and she became really religious.
Yeah,
like, I don't know what the fuck to deal with this, but it wasn't like it wasn't fake. Like she was, I think she was genuinely. She was mostly genuine through the whole thing and just trying to get by, and she's a victim because of it. So, you know, the foot thing, I don't think I needed to see him necessarily jerking off. I think I got it without it, but it's humiliating. It's like even she has to deal with this.
That guy
who was who's the actor who played Upham in Saving Private Ryan? That's who he looked like. That's who he reminded me of. And he was in Justified.
Jeremy Gordon, the intern. I thought the progression of that scene was interesting. It was like, what? Like, what's strange? She put her feet up on the thing, and then it was like, wait, what's happening? Oh,
yeah. I don't like that guy either. That guy.
What was
that
first conversation?
I know. Yeah. How does that happen? How does that start?
Jeremy Davies. I'm more interested in, I think, the next seasons of both of these shows we've talked about than I liked the first season. Like, I watched the original Game of Thrones probably 3 times through, and I don't know that I would ever rewatch this first season of House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
I watched the first few seasons a bunch of times through, but then not after that.
Right, but...
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, they would do the marathons before the new season would start, and I'd watch them. And I just don't know that I'd ever watch this again. I definitely don't think I'd ever watch the first season of Lord of the Rings again. I might watch like parts of it, but I just don't think. I think they're both interesting and shows that I enjoyed watching ultimately, but I don't know that they're good shows.
Right. No. Yeah, I kind of concur with that. Like, they looked great. Like, obviously, a lot of budget behind them, and I mean, like it was funny because halfway through the season of House of the Dragon, it was announced that the showrunner wasn't staying on for season two, and I just laughed. I was like, it just, you know, like, you know, like, this is the most important thing we're going to work on, blah blah blah, and it's just fraught with people having opinions and too many cooks and all that sort of stuff. And so, yeah. So
I mean, let's, this is a follow-up to the golden age of television.
Right.
And that's what we're seeing right now is because the golden age of television, you know,
it's over.
More or less, you know, ended with Game of Thrones, let's say.
Right.
And then the pandemic happens and like, where are we now? Well, this is like the late '90s in music. Like there's a few good things that come out, but they're not necessarily as memorable, and they're shadows of the stuff that came before, and now like we have to wait to see what comes next.
Right.
And it's probably going to be much more long-tail subdivided than before. Like there,
it's just a lot. You know, there's a lot more coming out as opposed
that
to
that too. And that's it. Everybody's trying to do their thing, but it's like 10 times the amount of stuff that there was before, and so it's hard for anything to feel special.
Right. What I mean is in the golden age of TV, it was more like, let's make the really good stuff that we have here. And now it's like, let's just make all the stuff we have here. And that's
right.
So you're because getting a lot less.
Make.
No, they're just because they need to fill the hoses. And so there's a lot less premium on quality. Let's make the quality stuff or what we perceive to be quality. And it's just like, we need to fill the hose. And so you're just going to get a lot less.
Isn't special
good.
Anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think
and
good stuff
is, you know,
still special. Just there's a lot more of it to get through
it
to find
is.
That. As opposed to like,
right? But
AMC had four shows.
What is that now?
You know, they had it's like Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and like The Walking Dead, and those are all pretty good. You know, pretty good shows. Like HBO only put out a couple of shows. You know, Showtime had a couple of shows, and so they could all be good.
I've noticed ads on, I guess I was watching basketball, but on broadcast for HBO Max, and they were mixing in the HBO Max shows with the HBO shows, and I was like, oh, they're killing their brand. Like, I was angry at the ad, because I was, you know, like, those shows on HBO Max are not HBO shows, and you are diluting the whole thing. I guess Mayor of Easttown.
That was an HBO show.
Yeah, no, but I'm like, there's been some, but they're harder to sort of get to. Is that the last really good one from HBO?
The last really good one?
Is that the last great HBO show?
I mean, the most recent. I mean, we loved Perry Mason.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
So are you excited for when they announce House of the Dragons coming to you July 4th, 2024? You'll be excited to tune in?
Succession.
Succession, yeah, Succession. Yeah. I can't wait for Succession, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, it was fun, but it isn't, it's like, it's more like network TV coming back than it is like HBO TV coming back, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch them both. I'll be more excited for House of the Dragon, although I'm curious now to see where things go with Ring.
Yeah, I will watch them both. I will watch them both out of a feeling of obligation rather than excitement. But we'll see. I mean, who's to project what's going on in 2024? So, you know,
I just finished Lord of the Rings like a few hours ago, and there was a bit of a high on that. Winning time is the other one.
Selim Brimbor.
Yeah.
I mean, in 2024, the three of us might be fighting a war in Europe, for all we know.
We're over the... Yeah. You would have had to watch the hangout for this, but we would have been over the maximum draft age by then if it were World War II.
All right, so you can check out, if you have, for some reason haven't seen them yet, the Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power on Prime, and you can check out House of the Dragon on HBO, HBO Max. Despite my problems with both, I think they're both worth watching. If anything, for the spectacle of the screen. I mean, geez, they just look amazing. And I love a fantasy story, you know? I'm reading a fantasy book right now. It's a genre I really enjoy, and it was unusual to get these both really super premium, expensive shows on at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely brought some interesting, like the fact that, you know, the battle between Amazon and HBO Max over these two, like the fact that HBO Max put the first episode of House of Dragon on YouTube for free, like the entire episode was just like, as an industry person, like that was like fun to watch, you know?
So. I had this thought as I was watching one of them recently, is that for, what year is it? You know, for 14 years now, we have been saying, I can't believe that there's all these superhero movies. Right. You know, but it became like so why can't you believe it? It's been the driving thrust pop culture. But as I was watching this, I was like, man, I love fantasy shows. Like, and we never got them. We did, but they were shitty. Like, they were cheap. Right. You know, like you'd have to, like,
Xena.
Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah.
You know, like they weren't well done. And you, like, they do their best with their script or whatever, but they didn't get good actors. They didn't have money. And now, like, you got these full on, like, fantasy shows with dragons and swords and shit. And that is more amazing to me than superhero stuff at this point. You know, and then the other one is like, they're trying to do, like deep sci-fi stuff, you know, with Dune and with The Foundation and like the few of those, but those aren't catching on, I think, in the same way. But like those two things having be things that they're spending a lot of money on and putting up front and center is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
You never watched Wheel of Time, right?
I'd heard nothing good.
No interest in it.
It wasn't good. Fantasy series, another expensive fantasy show.
There's been a bunch of fantasy series that I didn't bother with. I think there was...
Well, there's The Witcher on Netflix.
Yeah, I watched like 15 minutes of one of those, and I was like, I don't want this.
Well, if you like fantasy, it's a good time, because they're all trying to get Game of Thrones, they're all trying to get Lord of the Rings, and so there's a lot of them out there. Anyway, that's it for this week's, this month's show. It was, again, brought to you by the patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy. Those patrons have unlocked a lot of shows that we do, including this show, our Booksplode and Talksplode shows that alternate months. That's our graphic novel and interview shows, respectively. Of course, Josh and I always have our weekly Pick of the Week show where we talk about the week's new comics. Ron talks about the world of Android and all about Android every week.
Yeah.
They move the button. There's no button anymore. you just look at it now, which is better. iPhone got rid of the button too, and you look at it, but it do it worse. That's basically how that show goes, right?
Well, pretty much you nailed it. Yeah, I think so. Yep.
I don't know the difference between iPhone, but it's worse.
We'll be back in November for the final Media Split of the year, and then we'll have our annual All Media Year and Roundup in December, and a lot of the shows we've been talking about throughout the year on this show will probably show up again on that show. We're always excited to do that. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being a patron if you were one, for bringing the show to everybody. And until next month, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.